Okay. Now we'll call to order the study session for the Mesa City Council for Thursday, November 18th, 2010. Councilmember Higgins, you there?
I am still here, Mayor.
Good. Thank you. Hadn't forgotten about you. First item on the agenda is to hear presentation and discuss and provide direction on a hotel-motel ordinance. Chief, floor is yours.
I am here. Well, I don't have much of a voice, but so that's why I'm going to turn it over to Steve on this one. That's a good one, huh?
Mayor, members of council, back in 2009, we had a couple operations that were very manpower intensive and very fiscally intensive regarding criminal activity going on in certain hotels and motels. And in conversations with members of council, particularly the Public Safety Subcommittee, they asked us to do some research on the possibility of an ordinance that could regulate or assist us in our endeavors in not only making the community safe, but using our resources wisely and smartly. So we did do that. We have looked into several other valley ordinances, looked nationwide at some best practices, and then we began to put bullet points together on things that we would like to see in an ordinance, and then went to the industry members of the hotel motel industry, and had several discussions with them. Over the last approximately year and a half, we've had well over a dozen meetings with members of the industry to iron out, for them to educate me as well, because there were some nuances about the industry that I didn't understand, and so they've helped educate me very well, they've been a pleasure to work with. You have some of the best industry members in your community, so they're working very well with the police department where they can. So some of the things that we agreed upon was that tourism with the city and with the hotel motel industry is extremely important. With that in our endeavor, we also want visitors as well as the citizens of Mesa to be very safe while they're visiting, working, or just living in our communities. So some of the things that we agreed upon when we looked at the possibility of an ordinance is that they also agreed there were some hotels and motels who added to the police department's workload. In 2009, 6% of all warrant arrests in the city of Mesa were at hotels and motels. 4% of all drug arrests in the city of Mesa were at hotels and motels. And out of those, the top 10 problem properties were counted for 49% of all warrant arrests and 64% of all drug arrests. So together we identified a distinct trend, something that we felt we wanted to address, and some of the current practices that we all agreed upon were could be identified as things that we could work on to help us eliminate these things were not obtaining any identification from the person renting the room, failing to maintain accurate records by some places, and some of them either rent the room sometimes by the hour, or some of them rent even longer than a day-to-day or a week-to-week basis. Some of them have a combination of a daily rental agreement and also a monthly rental agreement, much like apartment complexes. So some of those practices we identified as dangerous practices in the industry that both the police department and the industry would like to see if we could address. Some of the recommendations that the hotel motel and the police department came up with, again, is to ensure the quality of life for the citizens, the visitors, and the working people, and to seek a balance with the industry. That was very important to us, and the balance will go into the future as well we hope, with training and ongoing relationships, with sharing crime information with them and et cetera, to work on even as the industry's technology changes and as technology in the world changes, the way they're going to do business changes, and we need to roll with those changes. So some of the elements that we agreed should be in an ordinance would be to verify the identification of the person renting the room if the person is not a member of a frequent user program, to obtain a license plate number or a vehicle description as best as possible, and make that part of the registration, the one that's going to be parked on the parking lot, and then to maintain accurate and complete records for Mesa Police Department inspection. And as we talked about records, some of the industry members have electronic records. Some of the members have written records. It just depends on how large of a chain you may be talking about, or if you're talking about a small mom and pop. And we did not want to put any fiscal requirement upon any of the industry members. We wanted them to play on the same level playing field as much as possible without giving them any undue hardships. So what we agreed was the industry pretty much agrees you need to obtain certain things on a registration form. They all ask for pretty much the same thing on a registration form. So as long as you're going to obtain those things on a registration form, you need to maintain those forms and keep them for police inspection. And this is, again, all what we agreed was criminals are using not being identified as a nexus for their criminal activity. If the police department doesn't know who they are, then they can operate criminally in those environments. So the identity is a very important thing in the crime-fighting effort and in making the hotels and motels a much safer environment. If they know they're identified, they will tend to stay away from, criminals will tend to stay away from there. Some of the other, what this does, again, on the next two bullets, was it puts criminals on notice they can't register under a false name. If they do so, the hotel and motel industry members will be educated by the police department and their industry on how to detect false identifications and from providing false identifications.
Commander, what would be the, what do you anticipate would be the penalties if somebody did go in and register under using a false ID? Or I guess if it's a false ID, there could be other penalties, but let's say they use false name or something like that.
Well, without giving away our criminal crime fighting strategies, obviously presenting a false identification to a civilian is not a crime. But letting the hotel motel industry, giving them the ammunition to say, we believe this is a false identity, them bringing this to our attention, and then them presenting false identity
to the
police department becomes a crime.
Gotcha. Okay. So this is a tool, another
yes,
tool.
Sir. Okay. Yes, sir. Those are the main elements of the recommendations that the police department and the industry are making. On the next bullet, there were some things we talked with Deb and some of the members of the legal unit. The frequent user program was pretty vague, so what we decided to do was change that to, or recommend that you might want to change to, a pre-approved identification system. And I'm going to leave, the police department would like to leave that to the legal unit at the city and the industry to come up with that exact identification system, because the industry already has standards for pre-approved, what qualifies as a pre-approved identification system. So we would like that to stay between the industry and the legal unit, not have the police department have that, necessarily have that say in that. What we would also like to see the hotel motel operators keep on their registration is just the basic name, address, age of the person registering for the room. The reason the age is because there are a lot of people who have the same name, who use false identities, and when they write the age, then it's easier for us to, one, it makes the industry member much more cognizant of writing that down and looking at that date of birth to see it says you're 60, but you look 23. So it makes them
that
much more.
That might be a tip-off.
That might be a tip-off.
Oh, okay.
Yes, sir. So it makes them more cognizant of doing that without writing their actual date of birth to use that as some tool later on down the line.
So they could put, you know, like 50 plus or 60 plus or something like that. It's an information that would, once again, that you use to give a, it's a tool.
Yes, sir.
Gotcha.
Yes, sir, it is. We talked about the one-year time frame. We, the police department, like the one-year time frame for ongoing criminal crime-fighting purposes. We understand the industry's concerns about keeping information that long and how they mechanisms for them to keep that long, them that long. Most of the industry already keeps them longer than a year. It's some of the smaller mom-and-pop shops that don't necessarily do it on a regular basis, and this would be a change for them. We could accept 30 days, and the industry would accept 30 days as well. 1 year is our idealistic view, and 30 days is what we really truly need to have for crime-fighting purposes. And then the last thing, the when we were discussing this all along, the board really, or the industry members really like the idea of having a review board. And we are in total agreement that a review board is something we would be willing to work with them on and participate with. Again, I've learned a great deal by working with these members, and they can keep us up on technology, and we can keep them up on technological changes or Arizona revised statute changes or things like that. It's not a deal breaker for either the police department or the industry. I've talked with Mr. Brenton, and he says it's definitely not a deal breaker. They all like the idea, but it would be in your hands to determine what you'd want to do.
So why is it removed?
Mayor and Council, one of the things we talked about at the Public Safety Committee is what would be the role of the board if it were established. This is an advisory board under our charter, Section 501. The council can establish advisory boards if it deems it's necessary. One of the things the industry wanted was that this board, this advisory board, would actually be a fact-finding and actually be rendering the decision on civil citations that were issued by the police. So it would be the advisory board who would make a determination, was there in fact a violation, and if so, what the penalty would be. My recommendation there would be not to give that authority to an advisory board. That is something that is within the judicial system, and if the police issue a citation, that citation should go through the normal process. It would go to a hearing officer or the court. Now, what we could do and what we talked about at the Public Safety Committee is walking through this process, if the police issued a citation to a hotelier that was not keeping this information, they went to the hearing officer or the court, and that judicial officer would make a fact-finding determination. Was there a violation or was there not? And they would issue an order, and they would also assess the penalty if there was a violation. If this was a first offense, the hearing officer could assign it to the board, and then the board can make a determination, okay, the civil hearing officer determined that you violated A, B, and C. You need to go fix A, B, and C, and then come back to the board. And if the board found that you did comply, they could make a recommendation to the hearing officer that, hey, they're now in full compliance. This was a first offense. Our recommendation is that you waive the fine or any other remedy. They would then go back to the hearing officer, who, again, is the judicial officer. They would have to make a final determination. Are they going to waive the fine or are they not? So One of the things that the industry wanted the board to have authority over, I have concerns with because it's not within our judicial system. That takes it beyond an advisory board.
Well, let me ask you, I mean, can we even under the charter grant authorities that aren't included in the charter?
We would not. My recommendation is no, you should not do that.
Okay. And if I could follow up, since this is a civil issue, can we issue, like on traffic stops, the officer can issue a warning, or do we do that?
We can do that, yes, sir.
Now, could we have the same thing here?
Oh, absolutely, and I think the police department intends that it will work with the hoteliers. And
wouldn't it be easy, just brainstorming here, because this is the first I've actually heard of this, wouldn't it be, or could we do it like on a first offense? It would seem, that seems awfully complex for a first offense to go through that whole thing. Would it be, could we like issue a warning or something that would immediately throw it to the, because it's not an offense at that time, but it throws it to this advisory board where they can then work with the hotel person without getting into the judicial system?
Sure.
Is that a possibility?
Yes, as long as it's not a civil citation.
Yeah. Sure. Well, I'm just wondering, you know, it seems like a lot of work for a first offense when really what you're trying to do is to get people to operate in a manner that stops this. I was wondering if there was an easier way to get it to the industry group so they could work together to self-police, if that's possible.
Yes, and we did talk about, one of the duties or responsibilities that can be assigned to the board is to work with the police department to come up with kind of best practices or, any other policy or guidelines, or work with those in the industry to establish best practices. So there are some roles and responsibilities that the board could be assigned if the council's interested in establishing one. I would just recommend that we not assign the judicial role to the board.
Well, I'm going to push you a little bit harder. You recommend that we not. The question is can we?
I don't believe you can.
Okay.
Mayor.
Now, getting back to, once again, I apologize. This is the first time I've seen a lot of these things, so if I have to dig a little bit more, it seems like there could be a valuable role that this board could play in helping people to comply. And it seems like we want to keep them out of the judicial system. We want them to follow the guidelines so that we avoid the crimes. I mean, can we do that? Can we come up with some sort of procedure in the police that if they find some kind of thing that we automatically shift to that? And I'm speaking for myself, so if others have a problem with that, keep it out of the judicial so that we can, if somebody has a first offense, they can work within the industry to help that operator come up with some solutions to their problem. And then if they're a repeat offender, then they probably deserve to get into the judicial system.
I think we could work that out, Mayor. That's the direction of the council.
I don't know.
And in the draft ordinance, I believe there's a statement in there about warning citations, and maybe we can use that as part of that preempetus for the board to become.
And I apologize. I have not seen the ordinance, so I apologize for that. I didn't get briefed on it, so a lot of this is me finding out for the first time.
Yes, sir.
I don't hear from anyone else on the council, Councilmember Fenders, but it would seem to me that solve the problem, keep it out of the judicial, would be best for everyone. If you could figure out some sort of procedure. And
the industry is very interested in trying not to be punitive in nature, to be corrective in nature, if they can, to gain compliance.
Isn't that what our objective would be also?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. And it is in our interest also to, as you well know, the police are always the bad guy, and we would like to have
thank you for
industry
that.
Members help us with that, not necessarily using a hammer to pound.
Well, the more we can use
over.
Them as a resource, the less we have to do, and we still accomplish the goal.
Exactly.
Now, we're going to go to Councilman Kavanaugh. Debbie, if we backed off and did not include that and purely made this an advisory board and we came up with some of these procedures, then at that time, you're saying that under the charter, you'd feel comfortable saying that this board could be established as long as it's limited to an advisory role and self-policing. I don't want to use that word, but an advisory role.
That's correct.
And this kind of activity you think would fit within that advisory role?
I believe it would, Mayor.
Okay. Councilmember Kavanaugh.
Well, thank you, Mayor. And by way of background, the issue of the advisory board or the hotel-motel review board is really encompasses the concept of a diversion-type program, which we do in many other areas of in our code or in the practice that we have through either our civil hearing officers or prosecutor's office. And the concept was to create kind of a diversion type of program where the industry, in concert with the city, would work with people who had been issued a violation to help them correct that violation, to understand what the best practices are within the industry. We have to recognize that we do have a real divergence of size of and sophistication of businesses. And believe me, I serve on the CVB board, and I know they want to maintain high standards for their members. And I think even if the council chose not to have an advisory board, I believe the Convention and Visitors Bureau itself would continue to have a working group that would, if members who are cited, they would certainly go to them and work with them. Because that's really been what's happened in the past, where there were hotels or motels have had challenges or difficulties. The members of our community who are part of that association do try to work with them. So we really, at least during the committee discussions, we did not hear the objections that from the city attorney's office about the citation issue. So, but I certainly understand where Ms. Spinner is coming from. Had we heard that earlier, obviously, I think we would not have included that in what the committee had recommended to the council.
Well, but I don't think we're talking now. I think we've backed off of the eliminating the board. If you say that the industry likes to have the board and we can work out a way to where it doesn't run afoul of the charter, my feeling is, and I agree with the diversion, I just, one step before that, why cite if you can put them to an industry program through an observation, a warning, whatever you want to call it, and then we avoid utilizing court resources for basically corrective actions that don't need to go to court. We can, if we get out there and we find that there's an operator that isn't keeping the records, isn't doing this stuff, and the officer or the department, I'm assuming that maybe a supervisor might be involved in this, however your procedures would work, could say, hey, listen, this operator isn't getting it. You issue some sort of warning, non-citation, but it's a formal type of thing, which part of the ordinance could be that requires them to go to the industry, to the board, to work on some corrective actions. And then as a follow-up, if they haven't corrected, then we're into citation stage. But it would seem like it would be the diversion, but would not involve utilizing judicial resources, when I think we could accomplish the same thing by just going directly to that board. That's what my thoughts were. It doesn't end the establishment or the need to get these people, these operators, into this industry group, and they could then self-police as they want.
We, as the police department members, more often than not don't cite until we have already had conversations and verbally warned them in the past anyway, until we just recently got a written warning. So now we can use the written warning.
Well, that would be a way to put them into a formal type of a program,
yes, sir,
or at least connect them with the industry group. And my guess is that, echoing what Councilmember Kavanaugh says, that the industry is going to be maybe, in their own special way, more effective than we would even be in getting one of their members to clean up their act.
That's what we hope.
Because they have as much at stake, if not more, than we do, because it's their livelihood. And it seemed like that could be an effective way to get people to raise their standards without us, without the city and the government and the judiciary utilizing our resources or putting down the heavy hand of what we bring to the table. Just a thought.
So with the recommendations, we're asking the city council to support the hotel motel ordinance with these recommendations that we have.
Councilmember Kavanaugh.
Thank you. I just want to say I support moving ahead with this. The Public Safety Committee this past year has focused most of its work on really two areas that occupy a lot of police time and create a lot of risk for residents and employees, and those were the convenience store ordinance and the hotel motel ordinance. And in this instance in particular, we've had a very excellent relationship with the industry, working with the police department and with the Public Safety Committee to help develop an ordinance that, at least as a committee, we feel will meet the goals of giving the police more effective tools on dealing with criminal activities that consume a significant portion of their budget, as well as making the hotel-motel environment a safer place for both employees and for guests who stay there, as well as the community as a whole. And I really want to applaud the working group members from the industry who've gone through lots of meetings, coming to our meetings, giving input to the Public Safety Committee, as well as the work from the police department. I think we started in a very different place in terms of proposed ordinance, and I think the comments from Robert Brenton and his members made important contributions for us to modify the proposal as it's come through. And I would hope the council would move forward with this proposed ordinance. Thank you.
Now, we've made a little, we've talked at least about a little shift from your presentation. We went from and it seems like the board is the one thing that we have. Are you based on what the discussion has been here, and I was throwing it out, so I don't know what the other council members think.
It's our wish as a police
to
department
have
that we keep the board as in that fashion, that it's more of an advisory, not in the judicial system part.
Okay, so is there any opposition on the council to moving forward with that, with those things, with hopefully setting up a framework where you can keep it out of the judiciary, without a formal citation being issued, perhaps throw it to that board, and I don't know what procedures you'll come up with in the ordinance, and work with the industry to come up with some program, a diversion program, whatever you want to call it.
We are supportive of that, sir.
Okay,
yes.
Councilman Richards.
Just to be clear, this would be another city advisory board.
Yeah.
I'm just wondering if there could be a more broad function for it than just hotel motel, because that seems really narrow. But
council, under the charter, you can establish advisory boards that you feel are necessary, and you can assign whatever duties and responsibilities to
we could actually, if we want to, assign this to an existing board. I don't know what the existing board would be, but we can define an advisory board and include this responsibility under that advisory board. We can broaden the scope of the advisory board and just assign whatever the ordinance says that function to that advisory board. Is that
that's
what you're
correct.
Saying? Okay.
All right. I think that's probably something that we may want to take a look at, just to make sure that this seems like a really narrow thing to assemble a bunch of citizens or a bunch of industry people
What we will be doing is bringing back not only the hotel motel ordinance, but we'll also be bringing back an ordinance establishing the board, because under the charter, the advisory boards are established by ordinance. So at that time, you can take a look at how we are phrasing the duties and responsibilities of the board, and if the council wants to broaden or narrow those responsibilities, you can.
I guess there's two ways of looking at it. The one is that we might use this advisory board as a tool for accomplish other things. The other thing is to do this advisory board and hope they never have to meet. If their sole purpose is to self-police, it would be great if we never had those kind of situations, that people cleaned up their act and they complied to begin with. So I don't have any.
Because I know we're also working on a convenience store ordinance, and we have some other elements, and I know there's each industry has their specific needs, but just always trying to find a way to be efficient.
You're suggesting we set up a board to handle whenever we have convenience stores in a motel that they can handle both those things? No, okay. No, I see what you're saying, and there might be an opportunity to maybe accomplish some other things with that. Councilmember Finter.
Just a couple of comments, and I support Councilmember Richens. We're getting to a model. How come this, a rhetorical question, how come this process feels so much better than the convenience store process we've been through? I think Councilmember Kavanaugh hits on it. The industry coming in early, being participating, just having a really positive effect, a lot of communications with an advisory board, totally support. I think they can be the balance in the system. What I hear is PD is saying that they're going to use every method other than the judicial to affect change and reduce call volumes. And if for some reason the balance were to swing to heavy-handedness, we have an advisory board that can be able to say, hey, something's wrong here, and give us advice. But just an observation with Commander Stahl. I've worked with him, and this is probably going to embarrass him. In the group home industry over the last couple of years, I've had the opportunity to work with him, and you talk about a situation that had a lot of challenges, and to be able to affect the change, to see that industry work together and organize, and having support from Commander Stahl and others, working with adult probation, parole, Department of Corrections, and we have actually really improved a very a difficult situation there. So he brings a tremendous amount of credibility, and I feel it here on this one. It seems like it's a real positive, and I'm hoping that we can take this model or these positive situations, lots of communications, and take, if it's convenience stores or big box retailers, or any other industry that we've had these challenges with PD generating a lot of calls, and fix these things on a positive way, I'm all supportive in whatever we can do to help. So thanks, Mayor.
Thank you for your kind comments.
Councilmember Higgins, you still there?
Yeah, Mayor, I'm I think it's a great job, then it's a good first start.
Okay. All right. So is that sufficient direction? Okay. Thank you.
Thank you for your time. Appreciate it.
Okay, the next item on the agenda is to hear a presentation, discuss, and provide direction on the 2011-12 Human Services Funding Practices.
Good morning, Mayor and Council. Ray Villa, Neighborhood Services Director. With me is Mary Beruman, the Diversity Outreach and Human Services Director, and Brandy Howard, our Human Services Coordinator. We're here this morning just to ask for direction from the Council as before we move forward with our Human Services funding cycle as we begin it, which will begin here very shortly, and just to see if there's any direction that the Council would like us to take with regards to Human Services. And with that, I'm going to go ahead and turn it over to Mary, who's going to give us a quick presentation on where we're at right now.
Thank you. Again, good morning, Mayor and Council. For this past year, we have allocated $619,896. $511,512 are from the general fund, and $108,000 are from the ABC fund. In this current year, we have used the human services funding model, and many of you are very familiar with it, but I'm going to quickly go over for some of you who are new to the system. The first is to engage these programs that will directly impact community safety services. They would support programs and services that encourage independence and self-sufficiency. We are committed to avoid duplicating efforts to provide human services, fund programs that provide diverse financial support and sustainable success, prevent long-term dependence on public resources, and to fund programs that have specific outcomes for the public good. In the next two slides, we have begun to give you where the money was spent in the last year, and you can review that some of it are, the first category is with the food programs, drug treatment, employment services, youth, senior, rent, utilities, and you can see the amount, and a majority of it is for shelter. So the total is $619,896. In slide number seven, you're able to see categorically where the majority of the money is being spent, which is with shelter, with rent assistance, food programs. So you're seeing a much larger percentage with that. We have been able to capture our results for the first quarter, what this money has been provided, and trying to remain good stewards of the money, and so have our nonprofits. And this is some of the initial data that they're giving us about senior serve, youth serve, individual shelters, shelter nights, and so on. What we're trying to do for this year is look for the next year. How are we going to spend the money? We've been interviewing our nonprofits just because we've just taken over the program in October. So Brandy Howard, our coordinator, has been able to go and talk to our nonprofits, see what are they seeing. We're also getting some data from MAG. What are they seeing on a regional level? and also just trying to accrue our own data as we get calls for resources. So, and I'd like to just give a snapshot of what's going on this first quarter so we can try to estimate for our future. And Brandy Howard will just give us a quick snapshot on that.
Good morning. Can you hear me? Okay. So we're looking at the data that's coming in about what's happening in Mesa specifically in regards to human services needs. And some of the more recent data that just was released in September was from the American Community Survey that's done annually by the Census Bureau. And these are some statistics about the percentage of folks in Mesa currently experiencing poverty. And you can see that the numbers are pretty significant. 13% of all people in Mesa are experiencing poverty, 9% of all families, and 19% of all children under 18. Additionally, we have data from Community Information and Referral. They do a quarterly report based on the inquiries and referrals that they process. And here are some of the more illustrative results. You can see here that of 1,014 inquiries for emergency or crisis shelter, only 815 of those needs were actually met. Also, 3,523 referrals were made for rent and utility assistance. If you look at these numbers against the funding that was made for last year's cycle, you'll see that we're pretty much right in line with what's happening.
So a correction would be is that actually they were unmet, 800, so only 200, approximately 200 were actually met. So we have a large percentage of unmet needs for emergency and family crisis shelter. Our next area is we're looking at our ABC funding. Many of you have the history of working with this, and I know some recommendations were made the previous year. In our slides, if you'd like to move to the next, we're able to see that our minimum donation, as you know, you have the history of it, was increased to $5 from the $1. From this year, we are seeing that our individual donors has decreased by 41%, but the overall amount of funds have contributed increased by approximately 66%. So our current balance for this for this first four quarters is $67,828. We are estimating that we'll probably have approximately $150,000 for this coming year. I know that it's very sobering to look at some of these charts. We did present this to our Human Services Board, who oversees and does the allocation for these funds. And what they were recommending is that we take a look at it over a year and see how it plays out. But again, since this was direction given from last year, you know, we'll make any changes needed for that. For this, if you can move on. Our proposed timeline for this coming year is we are going to be making some changes. Some of the feedback that we've been getting is to become more user-friendly for our general fund and ABC funding. So we're looking at our application process, our review process, and working closely with our Human Services Board. So we have created this timeline. We will be doing a public notice in December. Between a training in January, training the board, and our deadline would be January 25th, and that we would be coming back to you in the spring. And these are some tentative dates in April that we would be coming back to you for direction. We are just trying to do it in advance, and because we know that money is very tight this year, and I know that the budget requirements might be shifting. So we are just wanting to come to you for consideration. And some of the questions are, do we continue the same funding model? Are we on track with this model? It seems that we are based on the needs that we're seeing. Are there other policy and human services needs that are coming before you that we would need to address? And any other considerations as we begin this process? And that's why we're coming to you. Yes.
Thank you, Mayor. Councilmember Kavanaugh.
Thank you. I really appreciate the presentation and the level of detail. I serve on the boards of two organizations that directly deal with most of these issues. One is Mesa Community Action Network, whose primary function these days is working on rental assistance and utility assistance, and also on the Child Crisis Center. And what I'm seeing that both agencies are dealing with is a huge increase in the need for shelter assistance or to stay-in-place assistance through, for example, at Mesa Community Action Network, you see huge numbers of people early in the month, and there's only so much money that is available. People were, for utility assistance and rental assistance, were staying there all night to be there for the next morning. And it's very trying on the staff there when the money runs out halfway through the month. The other issue through the with the Child Crisis Center, for example, we're seeing more and more community placements of children whose parents are living out of their car or having circumstances where they're unable to have shelter or adequate food for their kids, or they're dealing with other issues. And so that's putting a tremendous strain and burden there. And Child Crisis Center staff is becoming more and more a traffic cop, trying to refer people for human services that the center itself doesn't provide. And so the city assistance through both the general fund money and the ABC program is even more critical for residents that we have. And I certainly think that the model that the council has adopted, working with staff, is really hits at least the major elements of what our population needs. But on both of these agencies that I serve, we're seeing people that you traditionally haven't seen before, and the need is from all over the city. It's not limited to any one zip code, and it's a really significant issue. So I really appreciate Mr. Brady helping to change the ABC recommended donation. Obviously, I think we're seeing the benefit from that, and I'm hoping that residents will keep that in mind. It's a small donation perhaps for them, but it can make a huge impact in the life of a family having a place to stay. So I appreciate what you're doing. I support the model that we've been using, and I certainly wish there was a way to further increase the funds, but I'm glad to see that the trend is showing that the higher ABC funds will be available to help. Thank you.
Thank you. Councilman Pinter.
Thank you, Mayor. Tremendous amount of good work being accomplished out there by these organizations. You look through and just really appreciate what they do and appreciate this presentation. I think I might have got an answer. I was kind of curious on the ABC donations. I was wondering, did that ever come to council, you know, the change from the $1 to $5? And it looks like the donations are up, but the people that are donating is down dramatically or significantly. I just wonder, is there a balance somewhere, maybe halfway, that gets the donations, keeps the donations up, but allows more people to donate? And so, you know, just kind of curious how that comes, and maybe I can check with the city manager later. Yeah. See how
no, works. Council more than a year ago gave us direction to move in that direction to the five.
I think it was proposed during the budget process, wasn't it?
Yeah, well, it was during one of these conversations. I couldn't tell you. I have to go back and see.
It was in the fine print.
Yeah, exactly. It was a discussion here at a council meeting. And so, yeah, it was that adjustment. You know, as you can see, for some people, they completely dropped out. But by maintaining, you know, going from one to five, but we maintain a significant number, the overall donations will go up. So, you know, at the end of the day, is the goal more dollars in the line or more people?
Well, I guess you could argue, I mean, could you have accomplished both purposes if you'd gone to three?
Three, and you know, that's hard. It's hard to know. Yeah, I don't know where that sensitivity is on that. But I think the longer we...
$4.99.
I think as we stay with five over a period of time, I think we'll eventually start seeing participation come back. I think that's what will happen eventually. So, I hope.
Vice Mayor?
As this discussion moves forward, when we talk about the future models of what we do, it's very easy to get caught up in the sympathy mode because there's a lot of needs that are not being met. That's a huge understatement for all of us. But we have to be careful as we look forward in how funds are allocated and what we participate in, because there are other factions in human services, and I'm referring more to the drug addiction and stuff, which has a rippling effect on all the rest of it. So we have to be careful not to shift too much in one direction or the other. We have to keep a balance, because if you completely reduce, and again, we're seeing that from the state level where they've eliminated funding in things, and in so doing, they're causing a heavier burden on agencies and in other areas where we have to be very careful. So as we look at the future model, we just need to keep in mind if we try and shift the balance too much in one way or the other, we cause a ripple effect that will come back and bite us in the future. So we just need to keep that in mind.
Okay, thank you. Any comments? You know, this is something that this model was created before I ever became involved in the council. So, but I think it's a great model, and it's a great model because I believe it strives for the type of balance that the Vice Mayor was talking about. I think that, you know, there are ideological battles whether government should be involved in certain activities or not. And to me, this transcends that, because what it looks for is an investment in the community that takes care of human needs that have a direct impact on the community. And I think with each of the things we're looking at, and if you look at the different the criteria that are used for within the model, it truly is, I believe, an investment. It's an investment in our people. And that gets it above the kind of, I don't want to say touchy-feely, but in a sense, the emotional side of things. Because there are so many more needs than we could ever begin to cover, that it's easy to get distracted, like the Vice Mayor said, and to get directed away from putting public monies where they have the most impact on the public. And I think the model is a great model. And I think it's one that should be a model for others to look at, because it truly does focus on community needs that have community impact. And I would not change it one bit. However, I would echo what the Vice Mayor said in making sure that the decisions we make are consistent with the model, which is that when we invest in one area, it's because we get a return in another area. I think what this model does is it dispels the naive notion that if you simply don't fund or ignore something, that the problem goes away, and that there you don't have to spend money on it. And we know from experience, for example, that if we have people who are living out of cars, we have people who are not taken care of because of their drug issues, society and the community pays a much greater cost, out-of-pocket cost, than if we try to take care of that and help that person get over their crisis. So I think it's a very, very wise model. I think the way that it's been implemented, I completely support, and I would hope that as we go through and make these decisions that you give to us, that you really follow the model to the T, because I believe it's worked. And I believe I have no problem spending the money where we spend it, because I think this community truly does reap far more benefits from on an individual human level and on a community level than we spend in these areas. So I would support you going forward and look forward to seeing what you come back with.
Okay. And I will give this direction to our Human Services Board, who will now start the funding process. We'll go forward with it.
Yeah, and be clear on that, because I think this council and the previous council was pretty clear that we're looking for that return. And I hate to put it in business terms, because it's that somewhat diminishes the human aspect of it. But I think because we have dollars are precious, we really need to look at those places where we can get the greatest impact on the community as a whole. And if you just stress that to the board. Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Any other questions or comments? Thank you. Okay. Ms. Crocker, I don't have a card. I don't think we have any requests to speak.
No requests, ma'am.
All right.
We have.
I don't think we have any session today. Nope. Oh, is it on the back? No, I didn't get. Oh. Funny. Mine isn't on the back. My back is blank. Thank you. Okay.
Mayor, do you want to finish off the rest of the agenda and then do that at the end, or what would you like to do?
Oh, yeah. Somehow I got to... Wow. Oh, might be good if I looked at the proper agenda. Sorry about that. I was looking at the wrong agenda. Okay. Yeah, let's go through and finish out what is on the agenda that is so blatantly placed before me. Hear reports of meetings and conferences attended. Do we have any reports? Vice Mayor.
I want to make one comment. And I've recently done some ride-alongs with police and fire, and just an observation that we need to get the message out better, because both with police, fire, and even riding in an ambulance where we were transporting, lights and sirens going, I'm amazed at the number of people in the public who just do not recognize what they're supposed to do when there's a emergency vehicle coming. It means move over, get out of the way, and stop your vehicle. So I just wanted to point that out. And a big thank you to those with whom I was able to ride along with. Great experience, but just a big public note. You need to clear for emergency vehicles.
Thank you. Councilmember Finter.
Had the opportunity to go over to the Salt River Indian community and receive a ceremonial check for funds for the fire department, their immunization program. Wonderful support, generous by the community that neighbors us there. And overall, we're a pass-through organization for many of the needs in the community. Nearly $400,000 in financial support for those different agencies. So really appreciate the Salt River community, the president, vice president, and council members over there. And I think we have a great opportunity to improve those communications and working with that community. So thank you.
Thank you. Councilmember Richens.
The mayor and I last Tuesday had the opportunity to go visit the fifth grade classes at Emerson Elementary School. It was a really neat event. The kids had a lot of questions, particularly for the mayor and his trip to the White House, I think was the thing, and even got him to sign a few autographs, which reinforces the Scott Bon Jovi theory, right?
It was funny because we're asking questions. The fifth graders ask some very, very poignant questions. But it was a little tough getting questions out. And then one person asked me, have you ever met the president or something like that? And I said, well, I got to go to the White House. And, like, the hands shot up. What door did you go in? What did you see when you were in there?
Is there a bowling alley in the White House?
Is there a bowling alley? So,
what was the coolest thing you saw? It was pretty funny.
That you know, we didn't interest him, but going to the White House interested them.
Also, yesterday morning, I had the opportunity to serve on a panel with other quote-unquote young elected officials from the East Valley, with the East Valley Partnership, a forum out of ASU Poly, where there's a lot of questions asked about serving and what impacts it had on your personal life. It was a really good forum. It was interesting. We had council members from Queen Creek, Chandler, Gilbert, Tempe, and myself.
And Councilmember Higgins and I, Dina, you want to tell about the Chamber of Commerce? You want me to do it? Sounds like we lost her. I guess I'll tell about it. Mesa Chamber of Commerce event at the Commemorative Air Force Museum on Wednesday night? No, Tuesday night, whenever it was. Very, very well attended, good event. And I just can't say enough about the Commemorative Air Force and their facility. I've now been to, like, I think four or five events there in the last month and a half. A real gem in our city and an asset that, boy, if you have a chance to get out there and go through their facilities and their display, there's a lot more than just really cool airplanes there. They have a commitment to preserving not only the memory of physical assets like planes and things, but the honor and the respect that we should have for those who have served our country. And it's a great facility, great organization that is it's a real gem for our city. So and they teamed up with the Chamber of Commerce, and I think we had well over 1,000 people at this event. So it was a very, very good event. Good to see the community getting together. Many people tell me it's the first time they'd ever been there. So that was really good. And I see in the audience we have our great staff from Falcon Field. The Airport of the Year, 2010. Congratulations for them. And are you going to get to that in just a second? Oh, I sort of like stole your thunder. Oops.
Yeah, I'm used to it.
Oh, well, you're close.
You're close. I'm close. Sorry about I think we can edit that out on the rebroadcast. Thank you. So I'll turn it over to Mr. Brady. That was a segue, Mr.
Very
Brady.
Good. Well, I guess we should do that first. So let's, Karine, why don't you come forward with your staff? Recently, there is a large group of Aviation Safety Advisors Group, as it's known. It's made up of representatives from the aviation community, including the Federal Aviation Administration. So it includes both commercial, general, and military aviation. Includes all aspects of the industry, and they look at, and as anybody who knows, as far as aviation is concerned in airports, it's all about safety and security. So for a significant recognition this year, Falcon Field at the annual Aviation Safety Awards banquet were recognized as the airport, Falcon Field was recognized as the 2010 recipient of the Airport Safety Award for achieving safety in the areas of perimeter fencing, which we've just finished up, efforts to maintain enhanced airport pavements, signage markings in high quality condition, construction of new aircraft run-up area to reduce aircraft congestion prior to departure, construction of additional runway safety area improvements, and increased pilot safety education efforts, the use of the Falcon Field Airport website, in addition to the website, Facebook, Twitter, and then, of course, our fly-friendly volunteer noise abatement program. So as you can see, this is about the equivalent of the Stanley Cup Award from the size of the trophy, and we just wanted to congratulate the staff out at Falcon Field for their great work and for their recognition as the 2010 Airport Safety Award winner. So congratulations. Do you have anything to say? You have your staff.
Well, see, now, wait a second. Now, I have to say, now, this is in addition to being the airport.
Well, right, we have the airport. Right, that was an award we received.
Yeah, so I see, so I didn't.
How long ago has that been?
That was in April, from
ADOT. Yeah. So this is building on top of that, that's right.
Yeah, so I see, so I wasn't stealing your thunder, I was just setting the stage.
Setting the stage. Yeah. Of course, that's what the airport.
I was teeing it up.
As the airport of the year, we should be recognized with
absolutely. They go hand in hand. Right.
So the honors just keep piling on Falcon Field.
The trophies get bigger and bigger.
Well, and I would just like to say that obviously this is a huge team effort, and that includes the council and the city manager's office, because without your continued support of the airport, this sort of honor would not be possible. So we want to thank you as well. It belongs to all of us collectively, so thank you.
I'm just trying to think where it'll look nice in my office, but
this is actually a traveling.
Some of you think I'm serious. I'm not serious. It's going to be out at the airport.
This is a traveling trophy. So
a traveling trophy.
For 1 year.
Like the Stanley.
Yeah, and then
Do they fly it from one airport to the next?
Yes. Yes. So air perhaps drops. you could maybe fly it at that time, and you could put it in your cockpit and buckle it in.
You trust it?
I think
you trust
do,
me
yes.
with it? Okay.
Of course, with the mayor we would.
Oh, it's like since the Stanley Cup, yeah, all the staff members, council members get 1 day with it, where they can put it in their office, take home a sleeve with it, whatever they want.
So we'll just let you know.
Okay.
Congratulations. I will say this. As a pilot who's flown all over the West, there really is something special about Falcon Field. It's a gem of an airport, and it's not only, I'm biased, obviously, but I hear that from a lot of people. It's just the setup and the way it's managed, and from the air traffic controllers down to the airport staff to the FBOs we have, it really is a special place. And it's funny. We've still been able to maintain that small airport feel and that friendly feel with the fact that it's one of the busiest general aviation airports in the entire country. So that's a direct reflection on our staff, and this is an incredible achievement. Congratulations. Goes hand in hand with we do have two airports in Mesa, and Gateway Airport, I think, 13 years in a row has received perfect scores. So we have two very, very well run airports,
very safe airports,
very safe and well run airports, and that's important, because I'll tell you, I've been in airports that aren't well run, and you can tell. And so thank you so much for working to keep our community safe. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Round of applause.
And then, Mayor, just a few announcements as far as the schedule is concerned. This Saturday, November 20th, District 3 Pancake Breakfast and Toy Drive from 8 to 10 at Fire Station 207, which is the Dobson 2505 South Dobson Road. So we encourage everyone to bring new unwrapped toys for the children that are at the Cardin's Children Medical Center. So we encourage you to make that donation. Just a reminder, we will not be having study session for the next two Thursdays. So that would be November 25th, which would be Thanksgiving, as well as December 2nd, Thursday, December 2nd. Many of the council members will be out at the National League of Cities Conference. So both of those study sessions have been canceled. Our next study session and council meeting will be on Monday, December 6th. I suspect we will have some items for the study session prior to that, as well as that'll be the first time for the council to have the opportunity to review the agenda. So look forward to maybe an earlier start on that day. And then we'll have only a few more meetings the rest of the year. Thursday, December 9th, study session. And it's going to be our final council meeting of the year will be December 13th, Monday, December 13th.
Okay.
Thank you.
Anything else? All right. I have a motion from the Vice Mayor to enter into executive session, a second from Councilmember Fenter. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? We'll now move into executive session. Thank you very much.